Nelly Sciuto, and I've been an actor for, well, a really long time.
Here's my number. Call me.
I've worked with some of the most famous people in Hollywood.
Anything unusual occur?
Define unusual.
And taken on some roles I'd rather forget.
Now my industry friends join me with their stories of faking it, making it, and taking it in Hollywood.
And now, here's Nelly.
Welcome to 50 Moments, Faking It, Making It, and Taking It in Hollywood as a Working Actor. And I just have to call this out right away. I, like a bozo on a Saturday morning, wore a green shirt on green screen. So I know it looks like I'm wearing Hollywood Boulevard as a shirt, but we tried all kinds of options, and Ben and I decided that I'm just going to go with the see-through shirt. So welcome to the show. So today, our topic is talking about how, I mean, I feel as an actor that I'm a little bit of a vagabond. Like, my life is, people always say to me, oh, you don't camp. I'm like, oh, I camp all the time. Like, I have to press the toilet with my foot. I know what it's like to be camping, because on a set, you're camping in a lot of ways. And, you know, just all the things that come in, the trappings of being in the business. And it made me think about how I've met some of the most interesting people along the way. And the friendships you form, because you're in this together. You're on set for 20 hours a day together. You make the best friendships. And so today, my guests are my brother, Jim Sciuto, CNN news anchor, and my friend, Cary Elwes, actor at large, who you know from everything, from Princess Bride to Stranger Things to Mission Impossible 7 that he just completed in England. So guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. I'm you know, bowing in adulation of two Hollywood stars while I sit back and admire.
Well, it's true, Jim. I remember we were, or Jimmy, as I like to call you. I remember we were playing tennis in the Hamptons, and you were like, oh my gosh, excuse me for a second. I'm getting a call from Cary Elwes. And that's how I found out about your friendship.
Yeah, it's one of the only good things to come out of Twitter, actually. We met via Twitter. I mean, I think Cary likes to follow the news, and somehow picked me as one of the folks he follows out there. Then when I saw he was following me, of course, I'm a great admirer of his. And I kind of messaged him and I said, God, this is such an honor. You know, thanks so much, whatever. And then that led to a dinner when he came to visit DC once. And now basically we're best friends. I like to think of that way, Cary, don't you? You do, right? We're best friends, right?
Very much so. And I sought out Jim. Once I found out that he had followed me on Twitter, I followed him right back and I sent him a note saying, I'm going to be coming to Washington soon. I'd very much like to take you out for a bite to eat. And we had a lovely dinner, and it's been a beautiful friendship ever since. And then I got to meet your lovely sister, Nelly, who we're talking to now. And so I met your wife, and I haven't met the kids yet, but I'm hoping to very soon.
But you met them online.
They really love you.
Right?
They think you met them like, yeah. They think I'm cool because I know you. And of course, we've watched Princess Bride a million times. We respect all the dialogue from memory and all the sweet gifts that you sent them, you know, the games and so on, really, really makes a difference. Okay. It has added to my dad cool factor.
Well, I totally agree. And I have to say, Cary, whenever I've talked about you prior to meeting you and becoming friends, I always mention the fact that I always think like the sign of a good actor is being able to do comedy and physical comedy, yeah, especially. And when I think of The Princess Bride, I'm like, any actor who can drag themselves around by the head on the ground for, I don't know, probably months when you were shooting is an incredible actor.
Uh-huh. That's very kind of you. You know, I'm blessed. I was lucky to get that part. I could have been busy on another show. You know, that's the beauty of what we do as entertainers is that, when an opportunity comes up, you have to be available for it. And so people talk about your talent and being able to score an opportunity, but also a lot of it is luck, being available. I might have been busy on another job. So I happened to be free and I got this role, and it's given me the life that I have and the career I have today. So I call it the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, for sure. Well, guys, speaking of that, I always like to talk about, and I'm sure my brother doesn't know this story, but I like to talk about how you started in the business. So, Carrie, I didn't realize that. You started prior to Princess Bride. So what was your first entree into the business? And maybe tell us a story about your most embarrassing audition.
Well, my entree into the business was that I started out actually working as a PA, as a personal assistant on movies. So I wanted to learn the industry from behind the camera, working in production, so that I could understand the politics and the mechanics of making a show. And so that's how I started out, and it was a great education for me. It was basically film school. And then the most embarrassing audition, I should say, was Kiss the Girls. I was filming an audition in North Carolina in Chapel Hill with Ashley Judd. And we were doing the scene at the end of the movie where we're in the kitchen together. And the props gave me a real knife to work with. And I wasn't paying attention. And I nearly chopped my finger off, which caused a halt to the audition, obviously, because the set medic was very nervous that my finger was hanging off by a thread, but I did get the part, which is good. So out of the anguish and the pain, I got the role. So
Jim, what about you? How did you start in the, I know, but tell our audience how you started in the business.
So different business, but similar to Carrie in that I started as a production assistant, a summer jobs in college at a small TV show in New York where my jobs were rolling teleprompter and putting tapes away in the library back when there used to be tapes to put away in a library, right? Before it was all digital and on disk drives, and just kind of being around the business and learning how it runs and then hoping for the chance to do something where you were adding value, to write. I remember the first time I wrote a couple lines for one of the anchors and those words came out of the anchor's mouth. I felt like, you know, the superstar that I, you know, composed English for someone. So that was the beginning. The real beginning, though, was after college, where I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do, but knew that I wanted to go overseas somewhere, and ended up going to Hong Kong and got a job there for a dinky little station. And that allowed me to get paid to explore the world. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. I felt like I had a paid traveling education, and it was fun and satisfying, and kind of set me on this path of, being a foreign correspondent, which is really still my kind of first love.
Yes.
Professionally.
Yeah. And you left out the embarrassing part.
There are a lot of embarrassing parts. Which one, sis?
Well, I mean, I always think about when you were dying to be in the Middle East. You really were. You wanted to cover the Middle East, and you did for 10 years successfully. And you used to call me, you know, from a computer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you had somebody, but you, right before that, you told me, for some reason, if you're in Asia or something, then you can get into the Middle East. So that story to me is hilarious.
No, as I said, like young people, you know, as they're starting a career, and I'm Carrie, I'm sure, and Nellie, I'm sure you've had the same conversations with people who ask for your advice, that no career is a straight line, right? Up or down, right? I mean, this is the nature of life, right? I mean, but, you know, there were a few moments where I questioned the choice and worried that I wasn't going to make it or didn't have the goods to make it. But I was in Washington and I was bored. I was working for ABC as a reporter kind of on the weekends, and I really wanted to go back overseas again. So to do that, I got a fellowship to go study in Japan, okay? But I knew also that ABC was looking for a Tokyo correspondent, and it was just after 9/11, and I wasn't good enough to go cover Afghanistan and where the real stuff was happening in ABC's judgment. But I was like, if I could just get overseas, then maybe they'll, you know, in some sort of desperate moment, put me on the ground there. So I took that fellowship, but I found myself in a house in Kyoto. I mean, not the worst place to be by any means, but I called Nellie because it was the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. For some reason, I was like sharing the room with this old guy who was like hacking up a lung all night. I don't know, long story. And I was like, what have I done? What's happening in my career? You know, like, where am I going? And then like a couple days later, I got a call. Often I've called Nellie in the worst moments because I know that she's a sympathetic ear.
No, it's funny because he left out the part that he called me crying. You called me crying. You were like, I was crying.
I can't stay here.
And I mean, the only reason it's funny is because, you know, it was just because the guy you were sharing a room with was disgusting. So you were crying. And then literally like the next day you got offered a job and you were off. You were like, oh, screw the fellowship. I'm gone. I laughed when you called me crying. I laughed, you know, that's with funny. You and at you because it was kind of cute. You know, that's all I have to say. Okay, so I also got my start in Asia. So I started acting a little bit in New York at 14, and I really started as a petite model, but Jim doesn't know this about me, and my mother's rolling over in her grave, but I became an accidental lingerie model. And that was how I made a lot of money, because I had like a handler who took me to Go-See's, and she told me it was for bathing suits, and I was screaming at her in the back room, like, I'm not doing it. I had to go into the room with all these Japanese business guys sitting around a conference table and have them check me out. And it was clean, nice lingerie. It was not like Victoria's Secret or anything like that. But somehow I ended up doing it and the money was good. So I accepted it. But my mother would die if she knew today. And then my most embarrassing audition, I have to say, is I love singing. I know you do too, Jim. And Carrie, I bet you do too.
I'm terrible at singing.
Okay, that's where my story goes. I love singing and I kind of think since I can carry a tune that I can sing, which is not true. And I auditioned for my friend's musical, Reefer Madness. And I have two songs that I sing all the time, and this is really lame. It's going to make me sound really old. But the two songs I always pull out, because I have a high voice when I barely sing, are Summer Lovin' from Greece and Climb Every Mountain, the song that the old nun sings in The Sound of Music. So I sang for Reefer Madness, the musical, Climb Every Mountain. And at least it was already ridiculous. And then they asked me to sheet read music, right? They're like, oh, and here are the songs. Like, at least they passed me on to the next level, maybe just for, you know, comic relief, I'm pretty sure. And they give me the original music and I put it on a stand and they're like, sing. And I cannot read music, but I'm an actor and I can pretend to do anything. So I thought I could get away with it. So I'm literally reading the music and I'm like, no idea how to read the notes. I just made it up and they basically laughed me out of the room.
Yeah.
So much to comment on.
Here's the thing. We obviously share genes and we are the children of a talented singer, yes. Our father, who was in the Columbia Kingsmen, you know, they're kind of
really Ernie.
Ernie sang into his seven, you know, like with a, a beautiful voice. He was a tenor, you know, most of the time. And a mother who could not like pick a note out of, you know, could not sing a single note on key. Right. So we have some, the truth is though, before my voice changed, I was the soloist in the St. Ignatius Boys Choir.
No way.
I had talent, apparently. Then my voice changed. I cannot hit. I mean, I love karaoke, but I stink, man. I lost it all at the age of like 13 and a half.
But you're really fun. You're fun at a karaoke event.
Oh, totally fun because I'm completely confident I'm great singing
karaoke. As every karaoke singer.
Well, yeah. In fact, I'm not. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So your father, Ernie, was a singer. Mm. And your mother, was there any actors on the Italian side or Irish side of the family? Were there any actors at all?
I mean, amateur actors in their life, in their lives.
No, but that, it's a great question that Carrie asked because my son is going to be a filmmaker and he's always like, oh gosh, you have the best connections, including, you know, you guys. He's always so excited about stuff like that. And I think I didn't have any. I mean, at least mom was a journalist of sorts and as are you, but like I didn't really have any connection to theater, to film, nothing. What was your perspective, Jim? Jimmy, what was your perspective?
Well, I mean, we clearly had inspiration. You know, you get different things from your parents. Oh, can you hear me? I think, mom was a journalist, so that gave me a little bit of, I'm sure, a spark of an idea. I think we didn't have like, neither of us had like a clear path where we had some sort of like boss somewhere who could hire us or give us a job or a role, that kind of thing, which would have been nice. But on the other hand, you know, maybe better not to, right? Because then you feel like whatever success you have, you own it, you know?
Yeah. What about you, Carrie?
Same thing. I did have a stepfather who was in the business, but he was the one who told us, my brothers and I, that it's not going to come easy. Mm-hmm. He was a producer. And he said, if you want to learn this business, you have to start out as a PA. And so he actually helped us learn the ropes by starting in the lowest position we could possibly find on a film set. And that is basically making call sheets and coffee and tea and running errands, that kind of thing. So as Jim did when he started out in the TV stations, putting back tapes and stuff, it is a great way, right, Jim, to learn the business. It's a wonderful way to understand how a show works, because you're really in the thick of it. And mm-hmm. And so by the time you make a decision to do whatever you want to do in that industry, you've pretty much learned every facet of it. Yeah.
Well, and I agreed. And I would have to say, in both our businesses, there's a utilitarian aspect to it, which is really what 80% of our jobs are. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm. Yes. And I think humility is an important professional lesson in both of our businesses. It's a life lesson too, right? But that it starts you off with a sense you have to earn it. And I have met people, and I'm sure you have as well, who begin with a sense of entitlement.
Yeah. Gosh, really? In our industry, in the entertainment business? What?
What?
And trust me, TV, you know, broadcast TV is not that far off from Hollywood.
No, for sure.
No, it's not.
There's like ego and entitlement and like all that kind of stuff. So we have it too. And it's not a great quality. First of all, it's an annoying quality. But it's also, I don't think, a great quality for success, you know?
Yeah. I agree. You got to learn the hard way a lot of times. So it's so great to have you guys on the show because, again, we formed this friendship. I feel like we have a friendship circle, which I love. Do either of you have stories of other people you've met in, you know, in the business in a strange way that you've stayed friends with or became friends with?
Carrie, you go first. I bet your stories are better than mine.
Well, I have one very important figure in my life. I was in New York after The Princess Bride, and I wasn't working. I didn't work for almost 2 years, if you can believe that. And I was at a restaurant with a friend, and Al Pacino was having dinner there. And my friend said, oh, my God, we have to say hi to him. And I said, absolutely not, because he was clearly with guests, and he didn't look like he wanted to be bothered. But my friend went up to the table and introduced himself anyway, and then pointed at me and waved for me to come over. And I was completely embarrassed, but I went over to say hello, and there was Al Pacino, and he goes, so I hear you're an actor. Your friend says you're an actor. I said, yes, sir, I am. He goes, so what are you doing? I said, well, you know, I'm going up on auditions and, you know, I'm meeting on stuff. He goes, no, you're not. You're drifting. And my soul just crushed because I thought, my God, Michael Corleone just called me a drifter. And he goes, and he points to my temple and he taps my head and he goes, what's this? And I said, my brain. And he goes, no. And then he taps my heart and he goes, what's that? And I go, it's not my heart, is it? He goes, no. He goes, these are muscles, Carrie, muscles. Do you go to the gym? I go, yeah. He goes, what happens when you stop working out? Your muscles, they atrophy, right? They atrophy. That's why you got to keep these sharp. And so he talked me into going into the theater and studying for the theater. And he put me in touch with his mentor, a guy called Charlie Lawton, who not the actor, but the same name, who was his teacher at the Lee Strasberg Institute. And I went and auditioned and I got in, and the rest, I started working right away, thanks to Mr. Pacino. So he's been a huge influence on me.
Might we say that your imitation is genius? So, Jimmy, I hope you have one too.
Thank you.
Now, I think your imitation's underappreciated. I mean, like when you did that thing on the Princess Bride character, the stories you were telling me and my friends the other day, I mean, Nelly, he had like Andre the Giant down. He had everybody down, Rob Reiner down to a T. I mean, it was brilliant. So I'm going to buy tickets to your, you know, your
stand-up, his stand-up.
I cannot do imitations. But, I mean, listen, I'll just like, so obviously a lot of the people I interact with are, you know, people in the news. And sometimes that develops into friendships. And one I was just thinking of, so when I was going to Afghanistan a lot, one person I interviewed there frequently and traveled with was General McChrystal, Stanley McChrystal, when he was in charge of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. And he's an interesting guy, man. I mean, this guy is a true intellectual. He's also like physical fitness. The guy would run like 8 miles a day. He would eat like one meal a day. And I don't, whatever. The guy was an interesting character, but also an impressive soldier. And of course, someone in the news. So since he left the military, we've stayed in touch. And a couple of years ago, he now teaches a course at Yale, among other things. And he was taking his Yale class to Gettysburg to walk battlefields as a sort of walking about the Battle of Gettysburg. And he said, would you like to come? And I was like, I would love to come. Can I bring my sons?
Mm-hmm. Great. Said,
I would love to have them there. So Tristan and Caden, you know, who you met on the phone, Carrie, who at the time, so this is a couple years ago, so they're like 8 and 10. And we go for this walking lecture up through Pickett's Charge and the Battle of Little Round Top, you know, with General Stanley McChrystal telling the story on the spots where they happen.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so just an example of how that kind of lives on. So Tristan and I have had this plan to make a Lego version of the battlefield.
Great.
And over the last several months, we bought little Lego Union soldiers, little Lego Confederate soldiers, Lego fences and trees and whatever. And we've delayed, you know, like a million things going on. But Tristan today is down there making the battlefield for Pickett's Charge out of like Lego platform, you know, whatever. So that's one of those things, and which is kind of nice to have.
No, I think that's really cool. There's like my story is going to pale in comparison to your all's. I got caught snagging a picture of Vern Troyer, Mini-Me, from Austin Powers. I was at the airport and I was like, and he's looking at me and he's like, I see you trying to take my picture. And I said, I'm so sorry, but I'm like a huge fan. So then we ended up taking a picture together and we sat next to each other on the plane. Like our seats were, you know, literally right next to each other. So we ended up being friends and having lunch after that. But yeah, all because I was stealing pictures of him.
That's hilarious.
In a very unsubtle way.
I steal pictures of Carrie all the time.
I'm stealing pictures of you guys right now.
All my screensavers, you know, are Carrie.
Ron, are you stealing pictures? I need you to steal pictures. I'm taking a picture of you guys right now. I'm stealing a picture of you right now, just like I did with Vern. Okay, so guys, it's been such a fun show. Thank you for being on it. And I just wanted to ask you if either of you have something coming up. Jim, you have so many books. You're probably, you tell us about your books. And Carrie, I know you've got a lot of projects coming up. Tell us about that.
Let Carrie go first because it's gonna be much more interesting.
It's all about Carrie today. And we all feel good about that.
Oh man, what a setup! I have been very busy. I've been very fortunate. I've been working in England for the last couple of months. I have a romantic comedy coming out at Christmas called Castle for Christmas with Brooke Shields. It's a Netflix movie, and then I did an action thriller for Guy Ritchie that's still untitled, and we don't have a release date for that yet. And Mission Impossible 7. Which is coming out next summer. And I've been very fortunate. It seems weird to be so busy during a global health crisis, but I don't know why. For some reason, I've been busy. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right.
Exciting stuff. Going.
So he just rattled off 3 Hollywood films. So I'm going to just try. I should really just bite my lip. I don't know. No, listen, I mean, what's coming up? I next Tuesday, I'm going to speak on the International Day of Peace as a keynote speaker about the role of journalism in conflict resolution. And it's partly based on one of my books, The Shadow War. That's up in Vermont. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Yes.
It's not Mission Impossible, but, you know.
It is a mission. Nerdy, by the way, it is a sort of a Mission Impossible.
It really is.
You're right. Literally.
Literally.
All right, guys, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And I enjoy our friendship and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, thank you, Nelly. We're grateful for your friendship and we're excited to read your book, 50 Moments of Faking It, Making It, and Taking It in Hollywood. I can't wait to read it.
Taking it being the important part.
And Nelly, I promise to keep calling you in tears. You know, that's
please do. I kind of enjoy it. Thank you, guys. See you soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
That's been another episode of 50 Moments, Faking It, Making It, and Taking It in Hollywood as a Working Actor. And thank you all for watching. I so appreciate it. I'll catch you next time. For information on my book, check out nellysblog.com. And I'm on all social media platforms. Just search for Nelly Shudo.